we are like a civilized city, and we are witnessing many uncivilized acts, in my opinion.
Both sides dig in on one of the most violent days to date in Hong Kong. This is Tuesday, November 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming up, protest around Australia after the alleged murder in police custody of an Aboriginal man by a police officer in that country's Northern Territory. You'll hear why apples are now a rare commodity in a controversial South Asian location. It all comes your way on VOA Asia. The president of the Polytechnic University under siege in Hong Kong has said he has brokered a truce with police that would allow the hundreds of protesters trapped inside the campus to leave peacefully. Teng Jin Guang Teng said he received assurances from police for a temporary suspension of the use of force if the protesters do not initiate the violence. He said, "We've also received permission from the police for you to leave the campus peacefully, and I will personally accompany you to the police station to ensure that your case will be fairly processed." It's unclear whether and when the truce ever took effect. Meanwhile, dozens of student protesters in Hong Kong had made another frantic attempt to escape the university that's been surrounded by riot police as the siege on the campus entered a second day. VOA's Bill Gallo is there, and he reports from Hong Kong.
Waves of students fleeing on foot from the Hong Kong Polytechnic University, running through clouds of tear gas as they tried to break police lines. It was the second concerted attempt by students to flee the urban campus, which has been surrounded by police who have repeatedly warned they will use lethal force. Riot police chased down students, some of whom were covered in blood. It wasn't clear how many have escaped the campus successfully. The clashes raised fears that the siege would end in a bloody crackdown. Students barricaded themselves on the campus and several others across Hong Kong early last week, stockpiling homemade weapons such as petrol bombs, slingshots, and bricks. Police have tried to break through protester barricades, but were driven back by the protesters. Early Monday, VOA saw police arrest dozens of students who were detained with plastic wire ties around their wrists. Some were marched in front of reporters as they were taken away towards waiting police vans. Ronald is a Hong Konger who says he supports the students.
"And I can't imagine it is happening in Hong Kong. We are like a civilized city, and we are witnessing many uncivilized acts, in my opinion. Like, you're arresting someone without any weapons, or many things that are beyond description, I think. Yeah. They think the most violent group of people is inside, but in my opinion, they are not really violent. They are just acting in response to the police force."
Thousands of riot and other police have surrounded the campus of the Hong Kong Polytechnic University for the past day, warning students to drop their weapons. But a hardcore group shows no signs of surrender. A student protester who was in contact with friends inside the campus told VOA that as many as several hundred more may be present. The clashes are some of the worst violence since anti-government protests began in Hong Kong 5 months ago. The students are calling for democratic reforms in the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
VOA Asia continues. As the protest in Hong Kong approach the half-year mark, the question arises, where does this go from here? We welcome to VOA Professor Lynette Ong, a noted expert on China. She's at the University of Toronto in Canada. Lynette, thanks for doing this and speaking with us. Monday might have been the most violent day these days of protest have seen. How much further can this go on, do you think?
So it looks like both sides are ratcheting up the violence. Police are trying to crack down on the protesters, and then the protesters, the radical ones, do not seem to be giving in to the pressure. So if that's the logic, I think we may actually see more violence and more casualties in the days to come.
Is there any way you can see out of this?
From what we know, Hong Kong government, Carrie Lam, has said time and again that it will not tolerate violence from the protesters. Beijing seems to be quite resolved in cracking down the movement as well. difficult to see a way out unless there's miraculously there are some mediators. But in this day and age, I think it's quite difficult to imagine anyone who could actually step in and mediate the situation.
Can you imagine this going on, and what would happen overall in time to the city of Hong Kong? It couldn't be the same city again, could it?
No, it wouldn't be the same city again. Even right now, as we speak, I'm sure Hong Kong today is different from Hong Kong 5-6 months ago, right? I think the society has really been very fragmentized, divided into various groups depending on what dialect you speak, which part of China did you originally come from, and a lot of intense animosity between groups, which is very unfortunate. And then Hong Kong's role as an international financial capital hub, I think that is also coming under question too. But if China has the intention to replace Hong Kong with another Chinese city, I think that will not happen anytime soon, because Hong Kong thrives because of the rule of law. Shanghai and Shenzhen or any Chinese cities will not be able to replace that role that easily.
The Chinese government, Beijing, seems to be ramping up what they are saying, as you said earlier. In fact, the Chinese ambassador to the UK said Monday that foreign countries, including the US and Britain, should stop interfering in Hong Kong's internal affairs, and basically laid out what was almost could be considered a threat line. I mean, are they really steeling themselves, do you think, for some kind of movement into Hong Kong?
No, I know any suggestions of foreign interference, I think, is really quite ridiculous, but also not entirely surprising, because Beijing always blamed any sort of domestic chaos on the black hand from foreign countries. We see that rhetoric playing out in Xinjiang as well. But this is a situation that, you know, the authorities are not used to, and the only way they know how to approach this sort of situation is to crack down hard on the protesters.
But you don't expect that to happen. For what reasons?
Well, because I think, any sort of repression comes with cost. And right now, Hong Kong government is bearing the cost of repression. Condemnation is borne by Hong Kong government. And if Beijing can get that sort of strategy working, there's no reason why it should send its own troops to Hong Kong, to the street of Hong Kong. Then it would be receiving international condemnation.
Well, the way things are going, and what you just said earlier in this conversation, is that you can't see an end to this, but there has to be some end. What kind of support is either, you know, carrying forward or moving backward as far as Chinese Hong Kong civilian support is concerned for the protesters?
I think the movement has really suffered being a leaderless movement. So no leader could actually step up and ask the people to stop. No one has the legitimacy to do so. University administrators either does not have the legitimacy or are not willing to do so. The leaders from Umbrella Movement a couple of years ago don't have the legitimacy today, which is why we have quite a few radical protesters still being resolved and doing what they are doing. But, you know, I mean, I have seen reports of religious leaders going to PolyU campus and trying to mediate between the police and the protesters. But that's all we are seeing right now, some community leaders coming forward. But there's no one with kind of real legitimacy that could actually bring two sides together. I mean, really, ideally, what should happen is Hong Kong government should really step up and have a conversation with the protesters, right?
Well, you know, Beijing has already said no compromise. Is that correct?
Yes, but, you know, but no compromise doesn't mean that we cannot have a conversation. I mean, a conversation doesn't necessarily mean a compromise, but at least you can hear what the other side has to say.
Lynette Ong, a noted expert on China, a professor at the University of Toronto in Canada, thanks so much for your time and your information. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. There have been some protests around Australia after the alleged murder in police custody of an Aboriginal man by a police officer in the Northern Territory. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
19-year-old Kumanji Walker was shot dead in the remote indigenous settlement of Uendamu, 300 kilometres northwest of Alice Springs in central Australia. He died at the local police station after two police officers had tried to arrest him for parole breaches. Northern Territory police alleged the teenager had attacked the officers. There are reports the Aboriginal man was armed, possibly with a knife. But his family argues that unnecessary force was used and that the police should have used a taser, an electronic stun gun, to subdue him. The death sparked demonstrations in Alice Springs and Darwin, as well as in Sydney and Melbourne. Muji Sumner, an Indigenous elder, believes police stationed in Aboriginal settlements shouldn't be allowed to carry guns.
The police should be disarmed. If they go into communities, they need to take a taser with them. That's better than shooting them dead. You take guns to war. You don't take guns to a place where you're going to be friendly towards people. If people need guns to protect themselves, why not give us guns to protect ourselves?
The accused officer intends to plead not guilty, according to the police union. Walker is the second Aboriginal person to have died in the past 2 months after being shot by police. Joyce Clark, who was 29, was fatally wounded in Western Australia in September. Authorities say the investigation into her death is continuing. A royal commission in the late 1980s investigated Aboriginal deaths in custody over a 10-year period, but few of the inquiry's 330 recommendations were implemented. In 2017, prominent Indigenous rights campaigner Noel Pearson said that Aboriginal Australians were the most incarcerated people on planet Earth. Official figures released in September show that Aboriginal prisoners represented 28% of the total full-time adult inmate population in Australia. The nation's original inhabitants make up just over 3% of the Australian population. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Almost 70% of India's apple supply comes from the federally administered regions of Jammu and Kashmir. But the lockdown of that region since August has badly hurt the industry. More from VOA's Ritul Joshi in Kashmir.
The wholesale fruits and vegetables market at Parimpura in Srinagar looks deserted, even though it's peak apple season. That's because wholesale markets in Kashmir have shut down in protest after the Indian government changed its constitutional status.
There are around 350 shops here, which employ nearly 7,500 people. Everything has been closed for the few 2 months. You can see for yourself how much loss we have incurred.
Article 370 of the Indian Constitution gave a special status to Jammu and Kashmir. And since its abrogation in August, the region has been hit economically. Phone and internet were suspended for days, and travel in the region was hampered.
We are not able to visit our orchards, and those living in the villages are not able to sell their produce because the wholesale markets are closed. Because of the situation, the buyers are also not coming here.
The apple trade is worth an estimated $1.6 billion to the region annually. But this year, farmers have gathered less than 10% of the normal harvest. To help, the Indian government stepped in with a plan to buy apples directly from the farmers.
Additional facility government
The government provided additional facility to the growers to ensure they do not incur losses. We are also facilitating transportation of apples outside the state as well.
But the farmers say the price the government is offering is too low.
Even if a couple of apples in the consignment fall short of prescribed specifications, they downgrade it to a lower category. With those standards, they should be paying us $1.3 for a pound.
The government says it followed last year's trends in establishing the prices.
Previous year's rates.
We have a record of previous year's rates for all the three grades. We took those rates as the base price and hiked them by 5% before notifying them.
In Baramulla, the largest apple-producing district in Kashmir, most orchard owners say it is too late to turn to the government as their main buyer. Ritul Joshi, VOA News, Srinagar.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.